Holly Wayne will be giving our sermon this morning, and I am feeling blessed to be able to welcome him here this morning. Holly is a man who has been part of the peace and justice community here in Syracuse for a very long time. I don't actually speak to Holly very often, but I read him a lot on Facebook. I find I say that a lot about people these days. But what it does mean is that his impact goes deeper and broader than he probably even knows. I find him to be courageous as a person in his efforts to speak deeply to issues that are important to him, even when he puts himself at personal risk by voicing those opinions. And as somebody who tends to want to recede into the silent majority, I find that challenge of yours a blessing. So welcome this morning.
So before I get started, I'd like to take a couple of seconds for us to sort of close our eyes and think about who our ancestors are. And by ancestors, I don't just mean necessarily your relatives, but, you know, whoever came before you that made your life, your struggles, your joys possible. And I'll give you one example. In fact, recently, it was the Trans Day of Visibility, and I was thinking about my friend, who since passed away, Leslie Feinberg, who was a local Syracuse resident, one of the first really pioneers of the transgender movement. I got to meet her and be with her maybe the last year or so of her life, and she was a person who was extremely giving of all activists and organizers, and I know that I'm here and that I have some of my courage and some of my bravery because I met someone as extraordinary as her. So if you could just close our eyes for a couple of seconds to think about the people who gave us the ability to be here today. Okay. So my name is Ali Wayne. I'm an organizer with the Syracuse Peace Council. I'm an organizer with Black Lives Matter Syracuse. I'm an organizer with the Workers' Center of Central New York, with the Black Alliance for Just Immigration, and for many other groups for which I do not get paid for. I happen to be an undocumented individual. I've been in this country ever since I was 9 years old. I turned 40 this past December, and I'm still in the process of getting my citizenship. So, you know, when you hear a lot of people say, like, well, why don't people just get in the back of the line, you know, like, I actually happen to be one of the lucky ones in the immigration system, because since I came here legally, I have a long and arduous pathway to citizenship. Many of the folks who are the 11 million or so who are undocumented, the majority of those folks literally don't have any legal pathway to become citizens. So when you hear that line about, you know, why don't these people just legalize, for a lot of folks, that's simply not a possibility. When I met with Paul this morning, I asked him, you know, how much time I had to speak. And it wasn't because I didn't know how to fill that time. It was because, if anything, I know that I can go over very easily. And my heart is definitely full today. I was thinking about... I was born and raised a Catholic. So I was very much steeped in sort of the Jesus of the gospel, you know, the Jesus who went out of his way to be with the quote-unquote marginalized, so the people who are outside of society. And I am someone who was born with a very impatient soul. And, you know, I used to be a practicing Catholic, And one of the things that really frustrated me about the church was the gap between the powerful visionary statements in the gospel and the actual practice that I was seeing in a lot of in the Catholic Church. And it frustrated me. And it sort of, in a weird way, sort of led me away from practicing, not because I didn't believe in this message, but because I became impatient with the gap between that powerful message that I was seeing in the gospel and the reality on the ground. And the reason that I mention this is that the hastily put together title of this sermon is Welcoming the Stranger. Right now there's a conversation amongst congregations over sanctuary, giving sanctuary to immigrants. And what I would like to say to you all is that Welcoming the Stranger is not one of those optional passages in the gospel. It is an imperative. It is an imperative. It is not something that you get to gloss over and say, well, we've had this immigrant family here once for dinner and that's good enough. And the reason I'm saying this right now is that we are in a time of crisis when it comes to this nation. A lot of people talk about this nation being a nation of immigrants, a land of immigrants. That is honestly being tested right now. We are in a very, very perilous time with a president who has pretty much declared that all of us who are undocumented immigrants are criminals. You know, because there's a lot of rhetoric about how you know, the president is only going after the criminals and not families and all of that. That's simply not true. If you look at the executive orders, pretty much any of us who are undocumented can be considered criminal aliens. That's a technical category. In fact, I myself, I came here legally, but I overstayed my student visa, and I'm not going to get into my own personal story. But visa overstays used to be sort of low priority when it came to sort of ICE and Border Patrol and the immigration services. Under Donald Trump's executive orders, we are criminal aliens. You know, I've been in this country, you know, ever since I was 9. Just 2 weeks ago, I got together a plan in case I was detained and in case I have to think about leaving this country, because we are in this harsh new reality of all of us who are undocumented right now are at risk. And what I love about faith communities, what I love about the gospel, what I love about the religious imagination is that it sets up tiers of sort of moral law, right? There is a law that is the law of the land, the law of the nation, the law of the country, but then there's always a higher law, you know, a call to love our neighbors as ourselves. This is why there is such a thing as a church. This is why there is such a thing as faith. Is for you all to remember that higher law. Because right now what this presidency is doing is that it is literally criminalizing compassion. One of the executive orders, for example, that's come down under Donald Trump is that it would criminalize the quote-unquote harboring of unlawfully present individuals. That means your compassion is criminalized. That means, say, ICE and Border Patrol decide that I'm deportable, and that you decide to maybe harbor me in your home, you could be criminalized. That's serious, and that's vicious. And right now, what is happening around the country is absolutely breaking my heart. I have friends who are undocumented right now who are afraid of going to the grocery store. They're afraid of going to the doctor's office. They're afraid of simple things like, for example, you know, those going on interstate highways, they have to go through those poll booths. They're afraid of that. That's the level of fear that there is in the community. In the past couple of months, for example, there have been undocumented immigrants who are so afraid of what's coming down the pike, so afraid of being harassed and deported by ICE and Border Patrol, that they have actually fled into Canada in the middle of the winter. Now, think about that. This is supposed to be the land of the immigrants. And right now there are refugees from America. Refugees from America. because they're so afraid of what this country has become. They're willing to risk their lives crossing into the northern border in the middle of winter because of how terrified they are of what's going on right now. And by the way, the technical reason why they're actually walking into Canada instead of like flying is that if you fly, you know, you're going to get turned around and sort of deported back to some country. But if you actually cross the border physically, you could apply for asylum. That's what's happened in the southern border for many years, and that's what's happening now even in the northern border. So that's where we are. And my heart is broken. I can't repeat that enough. But let your heart be broken. I mean that seriously. Feel it. Don't push away from the pain of this political moment. And it's not just about immigration. I mean, all of us who care, who have a basic level of compassion, are afraid right now, not just for immigrants, you know, for refugees, for women, for queer folks, for anyone, for Muslims, anyone who's a minority right now. We're in a dangerous moment. But there is power in allowing yourself to have your heart broken. This actually reminds me of a really transformative moment for me a couple of years ago. Even as someone who was undocumented for many years, I really believed in sort of the basic fairness of this system. And I had internalized the idea that because I was undocumented, I was an illegal person, and I shouldn't, you know, fight so much for my rights because I only had so, you know, so much space to really fight in this country. But I think it was around 2010 or so, a couple of us started hearing, you know, real horror stories about what was happening here in Syracuse. We started hearing stories of, you know, folks coming into activist spaces saying things like, you know, my father went to the grocery store 3 days ago. We haven't seen him since. My mother's been gone for 4 days. We have no idea where she is. And so a bunch of us got together and we figured out that these were undocumented immigrants who were being basically picked up left and right by Border Patrol and ICE. And it's really important for you to realize that the Trump administration, this moment that we have now, is a terrible moment, but it is a continuation of what's been happening for many, many years in this country. You know, we just had a Democratic president, Obama, who deported more undocumented immigrants than any other president, you know, in the history of this country. That's not because he's particularly vicious. It's because over the years we have been comfortable with the increasing criminalization of immigrants. And we have created a deportation machinery that is absolutely vicious. So going back to those moments when, you know, we found out about those undocumented immigrants being picked up and put in detention and eventually deported, a bunch of us got together and we created a group called the Detention Task Force, where we found those individuals in detention, we bailed them out, and then we worked on their deportation cases. And at the time, I was super naive. I mean, I really thought to myself, well, if we pick, you know, the best case scenario individuals, if we pick people who have been here for many years, long ties to the community, no criminal records, you know, U.S. citizen children, then of course, if we work hard enough and we write petitions and we write to politicians and we do media work and all of that stuff, then, you know, surely we'd succeed in getting these folks from being deported. We lost the overwhelming majority of these cases. And this is tied to my memory of church, actually, because I was in Plymouth Church, I remember, at the time. There was a family, a man from Honduras who had a U.S. citizen wife and two U.S. citizen children. We'd been fighting his deportation for 2 years. And his children, who were toddlers, were clearly traumatized by the prospect of their dad being deported. You know, to the point that every time he would come into our organizing spaces, like, we'd have to figure out a way to literally physically pry the kids away from, like, his legs, because they were so traumatized by the idea that he would be taken away from them. But after 2 years, that family came to us and they were like, we're tired of fighting, we're just going to take the voluntary departure, meaning that they were willing to have the father be deported. And he was deported. He's been in Honduras now ever since. Under the current system, he has probably another 3 years until he's able to reapply to be able to come into this country. His kids haven't seen him since. And I remember being in Plymouth Church at that moment and crying like I hadn't in a really long time. I mean, I really had that moment of my heart being torn into pieces. And at first I turned it on to myself. You know, I said to myself, well, I should have done more, should have made more phone calls, we should have written more petitions, we should have done all of that stuff. But it was a transformative moment because, first of all, it made me understand that we were dealing with a systemic issue, that it wasn't a case-by-case issue, but that I really needed to think about the broader immigration system and how it's tied to deeper oppressions, like, for example, the prison industrial complex. You know, who is benefiting, who is profiting from all of this misery? And there are corporations that have been profiting from this misery. The same corporations, by the way, who have been profiting from the incarceration, the mass incarceration of mostly poor black and brown folks in this country for years under the rubric of the war on drugs. Now under the rubric of the war on terror, they're doing the same thing, mass incarceration of immigrants. And to give you a sense about how recent this phenomenon is, you know, detaining immigrants is actually a really recent thing in U.S. history. You know, we didn't even detain undocumented immigrants until maybe about the mid-80s or so. And now we're so used to the idea of the mass incarceration of quote-unquote illegal aliens that it's just, we don't even give it a thought. It's just like, yeah, that's something that we do as a country. And by the way, this is something that this country has been condemned for. And I'm not just talking about Trump. I'm talking about the Obama administration. I don't know how many of you remember when we had the sort of so-called Central American refugee crisis of kids coming into this country from the southern border. The United Nations actually condemned the Obama administration for its expedited deportations of many of these kids and for the incarceration of men and women at the border. So just to give you a sense, this is not like, oh, you know, Republicans are bad and Democrats are our heroes. No, this is something that both parties have contributed to. And now we're in a moment when we are at sort of the logical, cruel extension of this criminalization of immigrants. But the reason that I say that it is important for your heart to be broken is that once I could access that pain, I was able to access my anger as well. And I'm one of those readers of the Gospels who loves the passage when, you know, Jesus throws the money changers out of the temple. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. I mean it, like, hold on to that. There are times when you have to say, no, no, this is unacceptable to me. This is unacceptable to me as a person. Come what may, I'm going to resist. And I submit to you that this Trump administration moment is a time for you to look into your heart and say no. Because I really do believe that in a couple of years, people are going to look back at this era and they're going to say, they're going to ask you, like, what did you do when Donald Trump was elected? What did you do at that moment when the forces of white supremacy and sexism and homophobia and Islamophobia, what did you do at that moment? Did you shrink into yourself? Or were you afraid, but nevertheless you acted? Because that's where we are right now. Because be afraid. I mean, I'm afraid all of the time. That's not an excuse not to do something. Now, I'm an organizer, I'm an activist, and I know what to do in these moments. That's what I've been doing for many years. You don't have to necessarily turn into this big political activist. That's not even what I'm saying. Say if you don't want to work on political issues, you know, join a soup kitchen, do some work that makes your community more compassionate. I think of that as political work as well. I don't think that it's simply about the love. It's about figuring out how we create a community, you know, that beloved community that Martin Luther King used to talk about, a community of compassionate people who resist the impulse of demonization and criminalization of other human beings. And if immigration is not your thing, obviously, there are plenty of other issues you could work on. You could work in solidarity with your Muslim brothers and sisters. You could work in solidarity with women and queer folks and all of the folks who are under attack right now. But now is your time to do something. This country will not survive your indolence at this moment, your paralysis. Feel the fear, you know, feel the pain, let your heart be broken, but God damn it, do something. And I mean that. This is your moment to shine. This is why you guys are here in this church right now, is because inside of you, you know that there is a higher power inside of you that this administration cannot touch. Whenever I get really scared, I remember to myself, there is a piece of me, a piece of my soul, a piece of my heart that cannot be legislated away by any law. And this is your challenge right now. Now, I'm working on a whole bunch of issues. As a church, I would definitely challenge you on the issue of sanctuary right now. I can think of individuals in our community right now who might be in need of that. And I don't just mean sanctuary in terms of churches. I'm thinking of sanctuary in terms of potentially homes. A couple of us created this network called the Overground Railroad, where we basically created a network of homes where undocumented immigrants who didn't want to be separated from their families could basically hide from the authorities. You know, there's that law of the land, and then there's that higher moral law. You know, which law are you willing to obey in this moment? Now, I believe that on April 6th, we're going to have a second meeting of a couple of faith leaders who are working on the issue of sanctuary. Let me just check on my calendar really quickly. There's so much happening. I don't have it in front of me now, but I will make sure to give it to you. Right, great. But, you know, whatever the issue is, I really hope that you get involved. Terrific. Yeah, I'll put it down. But, you know, I'm grateful that you gave me this space. I'm grateful that we're in solidarity and in community today. My guiding principle is an old proverb from Kenya. It says, "I am only well if you are well." This is where we are right now. I'm not well these days. I know that a lot of you are not well these days. The way that we heal is that we heal together. And the way that we resist is we resist together. The way we survive is we survive together. Don't think that you're going to survive this moment as an individual. You're not. Because this is a brutal moment in U.S. history. But if you get together with folks who are in touch with that deeper sense of resistance, who are willing to fight for you just as you are willing to fight for them, you're going to be okay. And I think that takes us back to that story that was that you told the children earlier. That, to me, that's where God is. It's community. It's folks getting together, folks loving each other even when it's hard, even when it's imperfect. Even when you may not even like each other, you know, there's no imperative to like each other, but there is an imperative to love each other. That's what you're here for, and I'm grateful for you. I do love you, and I hope that you will continue to love the people in your community. So, thank you.